everybody. It is great to be here one more time today. And my name is Gary Fowler, and I'm the CEO, president, and founder of GSD, Get Shit Done Venture Studios, a premier AI and generative quantum venture studio located in the heart of Silicon Valley. Almost got caught up on generative. I write a lot. I actually have my new book is going to be coming out next week on AI imagination. So with that, I'd like to introduce my guest. Janosch M. Stutz is a founder, a speaker, investor, and advisor. He's from New York, but he's originally from Switzerland. With that, I'd like to bring Janosch. Hey, Janosch, how are you doing today?
Hi, Gary. Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about it. So how did you make your journey from Switzerland over to the U.S.? I know you were working in ferrous alloys department in operations, but how did you, what was that journey like?
So my journey from Switzerland to New York is quite a long route. I'm originally Swiss. I was born in a small town in Switzerland called Zug, which these days is famous for being called Crypto Valley, with companies like Ethereum being based there. When I was born, it was more of a commodities hub. My parents, being very counterculture, actually took me to Australia. So I was born in Switzerland, grew up in Australia on a hippie commune, made my way back to Switzerland, became a commodities trader, really just more to kind of annoy my parents and chastise them for taking me out of this beautiful Swiss countryside onto a hippie commune in Australia. I only really experienced Switzerland in my adulthood.
Wow. And so how was it living in a commune?
Very interesting. Like, for me, it was normal. Because I guess when you grow up as a child, your environment is a normal environment. And, we had solar power, rainwater, chickens, a cow. My parents built, our family home with their own hands, and the neighbors who were also kind of members of this counterculture commune all kind of pitched in to build this small scale society. Very different, but for me it was normal.
Now, how big was your house?
Relatively big. We were dubbed kind of the castle of the commune. Swiss family emigrating to Australia, brought a bit of cash, whereas a lot of the, you call them hippies, in this area of Australia were really, bootstrapped, very, trying to make ends meet by, building their own homes out of adobe and, trees from the forest and really creating this like alternative lifestyle that was, all the rage, in the 70s and 80s.
So you're living in there now. How big was the house?
So we had this. So my father was very artistic. So he built an octagon style house built around a tower.
Around a tower?
Each segment of the octagon was a room, and then it kind of spiraled over the top of itself. So we had this beautiful big house for the commune, with this kind of tower that we could see over the forest and see, this beautiful nature that we had. It was definitely a very, very unique upbringing.
Wow, that's amazing. And so do your parents still live in that house?
So we still, the family still lives on the East Coast, of Australia, near a small town called Byron Bay.
Wow, that's amazing. And is the commune still there?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what do they do? What's different about a commune? Do you like have collective farming and, like, if one person makes money, everybody gets part of that money? Is that how it works, or?
So it wasn't exactly communism. The experience was more, there was a large piece of land, a forest block, that had kind of communal assets, communal dams, streams, community center, kind of like, amenities in a large condo building. But this was more kind of, the amenities were a pottery kiln that everyone can use, or you can use the communal pastures to farm. And there was also like a plot of land was reserved for a school and a you know alternative schooling system, a Steiner school, moved in and provided you know primary.
What school. Kind of school was it?
Steiner. So
what is that?
So it was a theologian from Germany, Rudolf Steiner, who created a new school method that focused on you know, creative education before arithmetic and logic thinking. Number of Steiner schools kind of popped up around the U.S. and Australia, and obviously in Germany as well. But very very different. And like I said, for me it was normal. And then, you know, as I left the commune.
So were you all in one grade or did you have separate grades for everybody?
Separate grades, yeah. But I think the Steiner system, the school system favors creative activities during the formational years of a childhood's education prior to the arithmetic with this concept of the creative mind needs to be developed first.
Plays and artistry and painting with the oils and pastels and all this stuff.
Finger knitting and watercolor painting over arithmetic in the first, you know, 3 years of schooling.
And how much better did it help you? Did you enjoy it or not?
You know what? I'm unsure. It was definitely fun. Like I said, it created kind of a different mentality towards life, where you can, you know, maybe thinking outside the box for you isn't outside the box because it was the box that you had available to you.
Wasn't a box, right?
Yeah, and so for me, like you know, physics, mathematics was, you know, I had to think outside the box to get that sort of education later on in my educational life. So.
And then how did you transition after that 3 years? You transitioned to more mathematics and reading and those kind of things?
Yeah.
And so how was that transition?
It seemed fine. I'm not sure how it was for everyone, but I guess, you know, if you, you know, have the focus, you can learn. And, you know, I think, you know, these days, you know, with the whole like rethinking of how people are educated and people's trajectories, you know, I guess, you don't really need to have, you know, for example, arithmetic or mathematics. You don't need to have like small amounts of it every year in order to like reach the same goal. You can kind of turbocharge it and condense it.
And did you do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what happened? You would have like Algebra 1 and 2 in the first semester, right?
Not quite. Not quite. But definitely, you know, I did extension units of mathematics then.
Wow.
Towards the end of schooling, so I don't think it impacted.
So when you went to McGuire University, right?
I did briefly. So I did. For me, like I said, my childhood was a little bit different, and so I went to Switzerland, became a commodities trader. So started off in a commodities firm, and everyone in commodities was saying you can't make it. In this industry, unless you go to college or university, mm-hmm. And I listened to that because you know I thought you know I don't know how to you know function in normal society because I'm not from that normal society, so I did do Macquarie University for a semester, and it wasn't me that actually was the catalyst to terminate after a semester. You know, that typical story of, you know, the college dropout. My commodities firm actually, you know, called me up 6 months after I left and basically asked if I would come back because they were unable to find a suitable candidate to fill my previous position.
I hope they paid you a lot more money.
They did. They paid me well enough to convince me to drop out of college and go straight back into the business.
Well, that's great. And so do you ever regret not finishing university or not?
Not really. I think there's, you need to, when you commit to something like that, you need to be comfortable with it being, you know, valid or valuable for that specific stage in your, you know, people say career, but that's the wrong word, isn't it? It's your own personal experience or your own personal progression in life. And I'm sure there'll be a time where, you know, potentially, you know, a university course offering would be, you know, the best place to learn something that would be valuable to my progression as a human.
Interesting. So you did that, and then you get the, so how long were you doing the commodities trading?
So commodities for around about 8 years. Yeah.
And then, so you went, how do you go from doing commodities? And now, were you in Zug then when you did it, or you went to Australia?
Yeah, Zug. Zug really is still, I mean, it is Crypto Valley, but you know, it's bread and butter of that region really is, you know, physical commodities trading.
And so then you were in Zug doing a trade finance officer. So how do you go from being a trader to being a trade finance officer? What's that like?
It was mainly, you know, a personal choice find the amount of skill sets that I wanted to acquire, you know, within that industry. So, you know, if there's a deficit in your skill set, you know, some people are fine, you know, mastering like one specific stream or career path. I was keen to get, you know, as much immersion as possible in the commodities field so I could progress my career.
So how do you go from all that? So you went to Montana Capital Partners as an intern, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you go to that to an expat specialist? How does it go from commodities trading to expat specialist at Swiss Life for Select?
So there's a couple of things that I had a deficit on the trading side of things. One was, you know, the financial industries. So I was very keen to dive into some financial industry work. As a Swiss citizen, there's something that most Swiss men can't avoid, and that is national military service. And so during the military service phase,
you have to go to national military.
I did, yeah. So I became a corporal in the sniper division of the Swiss military.
How was that?
Fun. Very fun.
I don't understand. The Swiss are neutral. Why in the world would you have to go to the military if they're neutral?
So Switzerland has a deterrent mentality as opposed to a full kind of non-armament mentality. So even though Switzerland hasn't engaged in conflict in some time, the military is still there as a deterrent. And again, it's, you know, just this inquisitiveness was very interesting. Is, you know, some people would say, oh wow, like if you can avoid serving in the military, you know, why did you do it? For me, it was very interesting because it's an offer that, you know, not everyone in the world gets, and it's not the act of, you know, figuring out how to defend your country or to be able to shoot or kill someone that's interesting. It's the skill set you get in kind of testing yourself as an individual, mentally, physically, the leadership skills involved in that as well. And so it was, you know, the formational years of, you know, the first kind of 10 years of my career was really like an acquisition of skill sets. Like, yeah. How do I learn as much as possible to kind of understand who I want to become as a human?
Well, I mean, if you're in the military, how long are we in there?
So in Switzerland, it's a total of 6 years part-time.
Seriously? So yeah. What does it mean part-time going in the military? One time you're in your fatigues, the next time you're driving a tank, right?
If you're in the tank division, then yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And so how does it work? Like, so if you're working full-time, how do you become a part-time, you know, army person? What do they let you work on the weekends, and once a week you get called up and you got to go out, or how does it work?
So it works in a kind of a similar format to the social security bracket that women get from maternity leave. And so your business has to let you go when the military calls you out. And so essentially
it was, they let you go, the military's going knock, knock, knock. You know, I'm coming to visit, right?
Yeah, they basically say, here's your marching orders. You need to serve.
Did you enjoy it?
Sorry?
Did you enjoy it?
Absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it.
And it's like, what's the greatest thing you did while you were in there?
It's the whole mentality about being able to acquire skills. Being dropped in the middle of the Swiss Alps and touring the mountains on an expedition with your group of eight individuals.
Did you have skis friends. With you?
Yeah.
And did you ski around like in the movies?
So that would be the skiing alpine division without.
Oh, really?
Without the sniper rifle.
Got it.
But yeah, it was like that whole formational time. My life in Switzerland was very, very interesting because it was I was able to use that as my canvas to acquire skills and figure out what I enjoy and where I want to get to in my life.
Now, how was it when you got dropped off in those mountains? Was there snow in the mountains?
Absolutely.
And then, did you see any wild animals up there?
There is. Switzerland has wolves, bears.
Did you see any?
Mountain goats, bears, yes, wolves, no, they're very elusive.
And then what about the mountain goats?
Absolutely, everywhere.
Really? Yeah. Are you allowed to hunt them? Or are they protected, or what's the deal with them? I don't know that much about those mountain goats.
You can, I think you'd probably need a hunting license in Switzerland to do that.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. And was it dangerous being up there? Did they have avalanches and all that stuff or not?
It probably depends on the region.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, so you went down through that. You were at Swiss Life Select. You went to Fellman Trading Europe. What is that?
That's commodities as well. So also was able to I moved with my team basically from one commodities firm to the other.
What about this Five Lion Ventures? What's that all about?
So when I had decided that I was interested in kind of aligning my career with my aspirations as a human, who I wanted to become, and what I wanted to spend my time doing, I decided to find a career set that would align to that. And I couldn't find a job or a career that was interesting enough or aligned enough to who I want to become as a human. So I decided to go into entrepreneurship. And that was kind of the catalyst for founding company Beam. Along with that, I managed to nab an analyst gig at a venture capital firm. In order to learn, some of the valuable skill sets on the other side of the table that a startup founder often lacks.
How long were you at the? I don't see that. Where was that? What company was that? Were you in?
That's Five Lion Ventures. So Five Lion Ventures is a capital firm.
So was it fun? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So how was? What's the difference between being a entrepreneur and being a corporate citizen? How did you have to act differently?
Oh, absolutely. Everything's a huge learning curve. So, really enjoyed the transition, though.
That's amazing. And then, now you talk about Beam. You've been doing this for 6 years. Tell us a little bit about Beam and what you're up to.
So Beam is a catalyst of trying to figure out who I want to become and what impact can I make. The world from a tech and evolutionary standpoint. And growing up on a hippie commune, we had a lot of intimacy in our communication. It's 40 families living together and communication.
Did you spend Christmas together and all that? Is it that kind of a tight group? Did you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Christmas events, Easter. And that intimacy and that communication is something that we as humanity have struggled to achieve using digital communication. Psychologically, from a psychological standpoint, it's most efficient and most effective to communicate physically in person. And we've had this evolution of the way we've communicated over distance, using things like Morse code back in the day to telephone, to video conferencing, which is the kind of the gold standard of communication over distance now. However, you know, video conferencing and physical in-person meetings are psychologically still, you know, very different. Video conferencing is still very inefficient. And so, you know, 6 years ago when Beam was founded, the whole premise, you know, that the founding of Beam was around was how can we create similar psychological and subconscious transfer of intimacy, information, and credibility over distance using tech. So Beam essentially is communication trying to replicate the same subconscious triggers as an in-person meeting.
And so what does that mean? How's business?
So what we ended up creating was a software platform that enables humans to live stream themselves into a spatial computing environment, so into AR or VR, essentially, you know, appear, you know, quasi as like a Star Wars style hologram in someone else's face, which provides that that same subconscious and psychological trigger of presence that an in-person meeting has.
Wow. And so how's business? Do you have any sales?
Yeah, so we've been working the tech for the past 6 years. We raised over $5 million in venture, went to markets towards the second half of last year, have been going to market with a couple of big partners. SAP is one of our big commercial partners who's selling our tech into commercial clients of theirs. And with the onset of AR glasses being launched in 2023, companies like Apple bringing their product to market and Qualcomm with their operating system, we formed a kind of a number of big partnerships to deploy our tech in.
How's business today?
Good. Yeah, business is good.
How many employees do you have?
So we're a team of 16. The team has been globally dispersed. You know, being a global communications company allows us to work remotely.
Oh, that's amazing. No, I love it. It's a great story to tell. So what's next? You're in New York. What are you going to do next? What's the next big thing? So if you say, this is where I'm going to be in 5 years, what do you paint the picture?
5 years is a long time for an entrepreneur. The phase of the business, AR is coming to market through companies like Apple, Qualcomm, Samsung, Google, a number of other big tech companies this year. So we'll have this shift from a nascent market to a more mature market. So for us, it's moving post our B2B deployment of the technology. We'll open up the tech to the consumer market. Anyone can communicate either live as a live call or in messaging formats as a hologram into anyone else's physical space.
No, that's fantastic. So we're coming up to the top of the show. Closing thoughts, and how do people get a hold of you, Janosch?
So they can reach me on Instagram, my first name, last name, or on LinkedIn, or our website, beam.me. For more details about us. I really appreciate you having me on the show, Gary.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you here. I really appreciate it. You know, you got a wonderful story. It's, you know, that commune thing is amazing to me, actually. You know, read a lot about it many years ago, but it's quite interesting. All right, well, thank you for joining. And thank you to my audience for one more time of joining GSD Presents Silicon Valley AI and Tech. And I'm your host, Gary Fowler. Stay happy, stay safe, and stay healthy. I'll be back at you again on Thursday for another exciting edition as GSD Presents Silicon Valley AI and Tech. Thank you very much. Janosch, thank you for joining us today.